Welcome to the Rod of Iron Podcast, Fundamental Baptist, breaking down discussions, dogma, and daily events. I am your host, Pastor Bruce Mejia, of First Works Baptist Church here in beautiful Southern California. And I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Pastor Jared Pozarnski of Holdfast Baptist Church. He's actually going to be preaching for us tonight, which for you folks that are listening, tonight has already passed. You're probably listening to this the following week. And so he's going to be preaching for us tonight, so we're just thankful to have him on. We're going to be talking about a couple of topics here. And so good to see you, Pastor.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
How are you doing?
Impromptu trip, but really excited to be back in the big city.
So. Amen. And then you brought your family as well. And
yep, everybody's with me.
You're out here on a particular mission, but you're also coming here to kind of be a circuit preacher for us.
Sure.
As well, right? You'll be preaching for us tonight. Now, you typically have your midweek service on Wednesday.
Yes.
Okay, so it worked out. I'm sure you preached last night. And then you're here, and then you're heading back home on Friday.
Right. Yeah, we actually came into town to pick up a dog for my daughter tomorrow. So we figured we'd make a churchcation out of it.
Churchcation,
And it's really nice that you have church on Thursday because we can come that's part of, the experience is coming and visiting you all at First Works.
So. Yeah, amen. Well, we're glad to have you. Well, folks, we're looking forward to a great episode tonight. And we're going to talk about a couple things. I'm just going to be asking Pastor Pozarnski just some questions about his church, how he started, how the process was leading up to him getting ordained, and some of the challenges that he's faced as a pastor, and what it's like pastoring in California. Is it really that hard as people say it is? And he's also going to be putting a plug for his new documentary that he just put out. And so we're looking forward to a great episode tonight. Let's get started. Well, Pastor Pozarnski, how old is the church so far in Holdfast? I know Holdfast was Verity Baptist Church, and it was a church plant of Pastor Roger Jimenez from Verity Baptist Church, Sacramento, California, but then eventually transitioned into being Holdfast. Tell me about that process.
So we started out in 2019 as a satellite. So we were a satellite of Verity Baptist Church for 2 years, and then I was ordained at that point. And in 2021, we became Holdfast Baptist Church. So we just celebrated our two-year anniversary last August. So we're, two years and, a few months old.
Yeah.
So as Holdfast Baptist Church.
Okay. And you said he ordained you initially. Was it an ordination as an evangelist or basically as a sit-in pastor, or how did that work?
No, so I wasn't ordained when I ran the satellite. So okay. I was just a satellite leader. Just running the church in downtown Fresno for Verity Baptist Church. So
okay.
Then I was just ordained as the pastor, after that 2 year point.
Yeah.
I was ordained as the pastor of Holdfast Baptist Church.
So let me ask you, did you choose Fresno? Was that something that Pastor Jimenez kind of casted vision for you, or you just kind of always had it in your mind that that's where you wanted to go? How did that happen?
Well, I mean, that was kind of a blend of different things. Number one, Pastor Jimenez had wanted to start a church in Fresno, and I knew that. It was kind of a mutual thing. I had done some work in Fresno, so I was familiar with the area itself.
Mm-hmm.
But mainly it was driven by Pastor Jimenez, his desire to have a church in Fresno. And, it was just the proximity to Verity.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're very connected with the people at Verity. And we always still want to be connected to the people at Verity. So it was close.
Yeah.
And it was something that Pastor Jimenez had his eye on. And, I was familiar with it. So it just seemed like that was the place.
And it's about, 2 hours away from Sacramento, is that?
Yeah, it's about 2.5 hours.
Okay.
Depending on, conditions.
Yeah, so. Traffic and all.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's good. So he casted that vision. He kind of always had an eye on Fresno.
Right.
And then he just kind of casted that vision, and you guys ran with it. Well, he wanted to start a church there.
Yeah.
And so, and let me ask you, so how long have you been saved for, and how long after you got saved did you start having a desire to want to be a pastor?
Boy, that's a good question. So I've been saved since 2011 or so, and I actually had no inclinations to be a pastor when we moved in 2016. So
To Verity.
Okay. So we moved from North Dakota to California in 2016. And I was just trying to get things right.
You're a North Dakota
man. I'm a
man.
North Dakota man. Yeah.
Where is that on the map? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, it's somewhere in the middle. It's somewhere east of here and west of New York. And there's not a lot of people there.
Yeah.
The entire population of North Dakota is 600,000 people. If you can imagine that. So
somebody minus like four now.
Yeah, exactly. Right. which is a huge problem. They're always, ever since I was a little kid, they're talking about how can we stop losing people from the state. I'm like, well, if it's 20 below zero, 6 months out of the year, it's going to be tough. So
20 below zero, 6 months out of the year.
Well, that's an exaggeration, but it's
kind of close.
Cold.
To that.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets cold.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, back to your question. I came to Verity just to be a blessing at Verity, and for the first year and a half, especially. There was really no thoughts of the ministry. It was just, I was happy to be there, happy to be plugged into a good church. I'm doing what we can to serve, soul winning, just doing the things that we were supposed to be doing. And then, brother Pastor Stuckey now, and, Pastor Jones now, it was kind of funny seeing all these guys together at Verity. We were all kind of there at the same time. And I kind of just started to get this nagging feeling like, I don't think we're all going to be together here for that much longer. Because these guys were making plans. Obviously, Brother Stuckey at that time was going to the Philippines, and it was like, man, we're not just going to chill out here for the rest of our lives and hang out with our buddies. And it was actually Pastor Jones that said to me when he was getting ready to leave, I had never even mentioned anything about the ministry at all. And Pastor Jones actually said to me when he was getting ready to, he got ordained and he was going to start the church in Idaho. He said, well, you're up. and I'm like, what are you talking about? So, the thought kind of like that duty started creeping in, that after.
Would you say it's one of those things where you kind of, it's not necessarily that you had a desire, but you're there in a church that's very active, and it's not only active in the work, but it's actively showing everyone the need for churches and evangelism. And so it's one of those things where a need arose, and there's men around you who are serving the Lord.
Yeah.
There's men around you who are devoted and committed, and so that begins to rub off on you, which is probably one of the reasons why, Pastor Joe Jones says, you're up. He probably saw that you're being faithful, and you're a man who loves the Lord. So it's one of those things that everything just kind of fell into place with that, right?
Yeah, and it was, I don't want to preach the sermon that I'm going to preach tonight, okay? But it's about influence, right? They say that, they say that you are the sum of your friends, and that's Proverbs 13. I'm going to read that tonight in the sermon, but you get influenced in a good way by that, and that's what's missing in our movement in biblical Christianity. Is what's missing is it's not the desire of people that want to go soul winning. It's what's missing is men to lead ministries.
Yeah.
And it's not that I didn't have the desire. I did have the desire. I just wanted to make sure. And I prayed on it for many, many months that I was doing it. It was what God wanted me to do. And I was cautious because I didn't want to do anything self-willed here I had just made this major move and brought my family there. And I knew we were in the right place. And to break out from that, I just wanted to make sure it was God's will. So I spent a lot of time, just in prayer, like, God, if this is what you want, I'll do it.
Was there ever a time where, because eventually you shared this with your wife.
Yeah.
And brought that up. Was when you did she have an inclination?
Let's go.
Okay.
That's what she said right away.
Was she along for, obviously she's going to support you in everything that you do and allow herself to be led of you, but was there a time where she felt like, I feel like this is what God is calling us to do type of a thing?
Okay. Definitely. Definitely. My wife was 1,000% on board and she knew it.
Yeah.
She knew it. And I, as soon as I told her about it, she's like, yep, let's go.
That's great.
And I'm really happy about that because as the ministry has been hard at times, she always can remember back on that, her heart wanted to go into the ministry too. Cause it's hard, ministry is hard on a pastor, but it's hard on a pastor's wife as well. Mm-hmm. And so we always kind of remember back to that moment. Kind of we kind of have our moment like in the car when we were both talking about it, and it was that let's go moment. Let's go talk to Pastor Jimenez. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you should do this. And, you know, she's always been behind me, but she knew, you know, she knew.
And it's really important, obviously, to have your wife behind you and definitely on board and on the same page. Because what if you had this God-given desire, this noble desire to go and start a church and preach the Word of God and disciple people and start a church and step out in faith, but then your wife's not on board.
Right.
She doesn't want that.
Yeah.
And so you could be greatly hindered from doing something great for the Lord and filling a need that this world needs if your wife is just not on board. Right. And obviously we're leaders, but that doesn't necessarily mean we can force our spouse to right do the things that we're doing and to serve the Lord. Like, they have to be willing. They have their own heart, their own mind, their exactly own volition. And so it's a blessing to have a spouse that is not only supporting you going into the ministry and 100% on board, but also desires to be in the ministry as well.
Right.
And so I'm sure you experienced that.
And I guess what I was trying to get at is basically, you know, we lead our families, we lead our wives. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's times when, I mean, I'm a planner and a schemer. You know, I always got plans and I always got ideas and things. And, you know, there's times when I persuade my wife into my plans and to, you know, and this is what we're going to do and all these things. But what I'm trying to say is, with the decision to the ministry, she was there.
Yeah.
And her heart was there too. And I'm really happy about that. I'm really yeah happy that I didn't have to, like, hey, you know, this is what we're going to do. And, oh, but I want to stay at Verity and this and that. Yeah, she loved Verity. And we still miss being church members at Verity, as weird as that sounds. But, you know, we knew that we're being called to something, you know, greater, because there needs to be people to start churches.
That's so awesome. It kind of reminds me, like, when we started the church, prior to us starting the church, and Pastor Anderson just kind of pitching the idea to me and saying, would you be willing to be a part of this? And I said yes, and I told my wife, and she said, let's do it. You know, it was one of those things where yeah it was just 100% behind it, and it was just a matter of, this is basically what we're called for as Christians, is to serve him, and we need to take advantage of the opportunities we have if we can serve him at a greater capacity, which I would say, right, being a pastor, you can serve God at a greater capacity than most, because it's basically what you're doing all the time.
Right.
And so it made me thankful that my wife was on board as well. So that's a good message to give as well, the importance of a wife not only being behind what her husband is doing, but also developing a heart as well that is in tune with the Bible, in tune with the Holy Spirit. And, you know, if God is moving the husband to do something great, that the wife is in tune with that as well. And she would also have the desire to serve the Lord no matter what.
Yeah.
Whether it's here or it's in a different country or something.
Right.
That they're always on board. That's great.
Yeah.
So then you guys talk to Pastor Jimenez, and then did he right away pitch the idea to you about Fresno, or how did that work?
I think I brought it up, but I think I mentioned Fresno first in the conversation with Pastor Jimenez.
Is that because he's talked about it?
But before? I mentioned it in the context of, you know, since you wanted to start a yeah church in Fresno kind yeah of thing. So it just kind of fit yeah for us. And quite frankly, Fresno suits us. You know, a lot of people are down on Fresno in California.
Why is that?
You know, it's more industrial, it's more agricultural, it's more blue collar. But that's kind of my background.
Yeah.
You know? So I love it.
That's great. Yeah, I remember when I first got saved, my father-in-law was really big on church planning, and specifically in California. He always wanted to start churches in California, and he felt like California was the place we needed to start the most fundamental Baptist churches, and he would always talk about the five.
Agree, yeah.
And he would say, Modesto needs a church, and he would say, Bakersfield needs a church, and he goes, and Fresno needs a church, and in fact, that was the first place he wanted to start a church. It ended up being in Los Angeles, just because, you know, the way things worked out, it was just a building was available. There's people who live there. But he initially wanted to go first to Fresno. And in fact, anytime he would go on a vacation with his family, they'd go to Fresno just so we can get vision. And he would go soul winning there with his family and knock on doors and meet the people. And he just had this really strong desire to go to Fresno. But of course, it never came to fruition, which it makes me ecstatic and happy that I'm part of a movement where I have a pastor friend who went to Fresno, you know, because I just don't know if there's a lot of churches that are trying to, or fundamental Baptists that want to go there for whatever reason. And so you went there, you started it. Tell us about the first year of, obviously you weren't the ordained pastor as of yet, but you were pastoring the people. Tell us about that first year. How was it?
Well, it was, there was a lot of things that were surprising about it to me. We got a building in, the soul winning was super receptive because we got a building in downtown. So I found the kind of the cheapest, best deal I could find for a building. And we were right in downtown Fresno. And if you know anything about Fresno, it's like nobody really goes to downtown Fresno because it's kind of the bad area. So it was in bad in the sense of not so much the neighborhoods and the people.
A lot of homeless?
Just homeless and bums everywhere. I mean, drug addicts everywhere. So it was a battle for the whole 2 years we were down there. It was a personal battle for me, just keeping the building in order, keeping the messes out of the, you know, it was...
So were these homeless people like just really aggressive or?
Oh, I mean, where to begin? I mean, it's...
Tell me about, okay, out of all the stories you have, what is the craziest thing that just sticks out when it comes to just some confrontation with the homeless person there?
They threatened to kill me on a regular basis, I think. And
all right, like, that's kind of extreme.
you get to the point where you don't really take it seriously anymore, but... one guy threw a bottle at me, and then, you know, I kind of went through a little bit of an ebb and flow where I got kind of aggressive, like trying to get these people out of there. But the whole front of our building was glass. And the problem is I'm not there to guard the place 24/7. And we had one guy threw a whiskey bottle through one of our glass walls.
Oh, man.
And it cost us $2,000, you know, to replace the glass. So I put up fake video cameras. I can't tell you how many messes I cleaned up in front of the front door of the church. It's like I said, I've told the church people it's a good thing I grew up on a farm because, you know, just it's just unbelievable the wickedness.
Taking care of the
some
livestock,
of these people.
Cleaning up for the livestock, kind of prepared you for that,
exactly.
Huh?
But I mean, the craziest story was I think some of the kids came to me. We had an old stove in the back of the. In the back of the church, and I had unwired this old stove so the kids couldn't accidentally turn it on, kind of thing. And so the kids, they came to me and the ushers after church one day. They were all playing in the back and playing around in the church fellowship area, and they said, "We smell something burning." And I was like, "How did they get that stove going?" You know, I'd unwired it and taped up all the ends and disconnected everything. And we walked around, we couldn't find anything, you know, burning in the church. And so finally, I walked outside with the ushers. I'm the satellite leader at this time, and walked around. And there's an alley in the back where there was a dumpster. And the dumpsters, they attract these folks. So, and here's a guy, and we've got the gas mains coming into the building, the gas meter coming right into the building. And he's sitting right, his back is up against the gas main, and he's got a campfire going right underneath the gas lines.
Oh.
And, I mean, I don't really even remember the next few seconds, but I kicked that campfire. That thing was like a meteor flying through the air, and that guy was I kicked his campfire about 20 yards, and he's just like, "Whoa, bro, calm down." I'm like, "Calm down. What's the matter with you?" You know, I mean,
you about to blow us all up? What do you mean, calm down?
You see what you're doing here? You know, and the dumpster was a problem. I mean, if there's throwing trash everywhere constantly. And another story, I remember I went fishing and I caught like 150 fish with the people I was fishing with over the weekend. And,
wow.
And this dumpster was, that's normal for us. We're really good fishermen at Holdfast Baptist Church.
Really? So you're good at being fishers of men, but also fishing.
Also literally fishing, yes. So anyway, I caught all these fish and I cleaned these fish on Saturday and I just put all these guts in this big garbage bag. And I'm like, "Now I'll show these guys to make a mess in front of the church." And I put all these fish guts in the dumpster in these garbage bags. If you know anything about fish guts,
they start
to smell like almost right away. So I figured,
if it's hot, and
they're not going to touch my dumpster ever again. And here I come to church Sunday morning, and everything's gone. Somebody took those bags. So I mean, I don't know. It was a constant battle with the homeless and the drug addicts downtown. The Fresno police tried to help us. I mean, they were. you know, they were cool. I mean, they were really good. They helped us out in a lot of different situations that we had with these people.
So most of the problems you're experiencing as far as the people are concerned are homeless. No problems with gang members or anything like that.
You know, I don't think you should join a gang, you know, but gang members have never given us any trouble at all.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the same for you, but no. Like we're out soul winning and I don't really
they're always the most receptive.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even really know who the gang members are, but like people from Fresno will tell me that was a gang member, you know, but they're usually very respectful and very receptive to the gospel. Even when you feel like you're out soul winning and you feel like maybe you just walked into a situation where something weird's going on, even then, you know, the gang members never had any trouble with those folks. So, like, you know, I'm not for gangs, obviously. I'm not trying to make it sound like it's a good thing. But my thought on gangs after being in California for a few years is I think it's probably, you know, a few bad apples leading the majority of normal people down a bad path.
Well, the years that I've been in ministry, that I've witnessed to hundreds of gang members, and in my experience, they've been some of the most receptive people.
Yeah.
And I joke around a little bit about it because I always say, like, maybe it's because they're always near death. You know, they're just in gangs and they're drive-bys. You just never know when they're going to die. And so they're more open to the idea or thinking about what's going to happen when they die. And most of them are God-fearing people in the sense of, when they meet a man of God, a pastor of sorts, they have a tendency to show some respect, and they never want to be, and they view it as like, well, I don't want to be irreverent towards the Lord, and this is someone that the Lord is sending. And so in my opinion, that's why they're so kind and respectable towards the man of God, because, you know, they want to learn about what's going to happen when they die, and maybe their mom or their dad was religious at one point. And, you know, I don't know what's the ethnic background in Fresno. Is there a lot of Mexicans? Is there a lot of black people, well, black gangs, you know, Mexican gangs?
They're the overall, like, typical, you know, with the gang members, the thing is they believe the Bible.
Yeah.
You know, and in Fresno, it's Hispanic, Mexican, Catholic. That's okay. A big, big cut of the population right there. Obviously, there's black neighborhoods, and those are very receptive too. But as far as like the gang members that I've seen and run across, they tend to be, you know, Hispanic gangs, whatever gangs those are. I'm not even really sure. But they believe the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start showing them what the Bible says, they want to know, they're interested, they believe what it says. You don't have to jump that bridge, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to cross that bridge with them. It's just like the Catholic, right? Mm-hmm. They believe the Bible. They just don't know what it says.
Right.
And then you show them what it says, and it's an easy... It reminds me very much of the Philippines, actually. Mm. So, you know, you got a bunch of people that believe the Bible is the Word of God. They've just been lied to about what it actually says.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's... The funny thing is we'll get new church members, and we'll get new people that are from Fresno, and then they'll start soul winning. And we'll go to some of these neighborhoods. They're like, "Do you understand the neighborhood we're in?" And it's like, "It's cool. Don't worry about it. You know, I'm from North Dakota. I got you. You know,
I'm from ND."
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, here's this guy walking around like there's no problems, but you know, there's no problems because the Lord's with us.
That's awesome. So you've had fightings without, but just like any other church who's doing the will of God, you're going to have some fightings within as well.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you've had your share of bad apples.
Yeah.
You know, and I think pretty much I believe that any church has the bad apples. It's just that there's some pastors who are not willing to deal with it, or they just kind of overlook them, or they allow themselves to be manipulated by the bad apples, because every church has infiltrators or will have infiltrators.
Sure.
It's just our job as shepherds to spot out the wolf and deal with them, right?
Right.
And so you've had some pretty crazy things happen at the church there with, you know, people who have crept in unawares. Can you share some of you don't have to drop names or anything, but tell us about some of those experiences, because this is a legitimate issue that comes up with churches, and pastors need to be aware of this. What's going on?
Well, it really started with us the first year, like right after, like immediately after the ordination. And, you know, there was just a lot of trouble in the church. I mean, there had been some previously already, And there was obviously some, you know, questions about certain people and things like that. But I did learn a lot that first year. It was a very difficult first year because there were just a lot of people that did a lot of very bad things. And I don't want to give any airtime to anybody and all that kind of stuff. But it's funny because Pastor Jimenez, and I've talked to him about it since actually during the first year that this happened, but he basically, during the ordination sermon, he preached a sermon that was, and here I had just run the satellite for 2 years and I'm getting ordained and, and I'm kind of like, all right, you know, made it.
Yeah.
And he preaches a sermon like you're going to be attacked and people are going to lie about you. They're going to lie about your family. They're going to do all this stuff. And I'm just like, man, this is kind of dark, you know, the sermon, you know. I'm thinking at the time, right? And now you ask me now, I'm like, the man's a prophet, you know? And, but anyway, it was like a switch flipped. It was crazy. I mean, I started getting...
It's almost as if they were just waiting for that moment.
I mean, I got accused of being a oneness Pentecostal, and like anybody that goes to my church knows that I'm a little over the top on Pentecostals. Like, I'm a little hard on them. But just because, you know, some of them are very difficult people, you know, when you start giving the gospel.
Yeah.
But I just got... I mean, my family was attacked. My wife was attacked. It's like, you know, come at me. But we're through all that. But it was a lesson. And it was a lesson that... This is what, you know, it takes to go into the ministry. It was a lesson for my wife and I. You know, we how could we, you know, handle people like that better next time? We did, you know, we always like to learn from, I always like to learn from whatever I can. And look, the ministry, I had no idea. And Pastor Jimenez had preached about this stuff before. So to all the people, you know, listening, you're sitting in church, and if your pastor gets up and preaches a sermon about, you know, the difficulties of the ministry and things like that, I had heard those sermons before.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard Pastor Jimenez preach that many, many times. I'm like, oh, I'm sure it is difficult, you know, and this and that. And, you know, as a church member sitting in the chairs.
You don't really know until you live it.
I just had no idea.
Yeah.
I really had no idea. It's really a spiritual war, and it all comes back to, you know, I'm glad that I prayed to God for months to go into the ministry. I knew we were doing what we were supposed to be doing. My wife was on board 100%, and it always came back to that. We just got to ride through these hard times. And you know what? I mean, the people that are with us, the people that rode through those hard times, I mean, like, we just came out of it stronger.
And there is an important principle that, you know, as you grow as a church, as a pastor, you are going to have to get rid of people. Because if people in your church are going to thrive, if you're going to thrive as a church, you have to get rid of the individuals who are going to hinder that growth.
Yeah.
And I just, obviously, you can think of an extreme of, you know, Satan sowing a tare, right? Whereas just a full-blown reprobate who hates the Lord and is there just to cause conflict. But then there's individuals who are saved, and they're not reprobates, they're saved, they're Christians, but they're just problematic people and can't seem to fit within a local New Testament church, or they're just problematic for whatever reason. It's like you have to learn how to deal with all of those categories of individuals.
Right.
But you've had to take out the trash a couple times, and there's people who went after you and attacked you in your ministry. You know, what was your initial thought when that started happening?
Well, I mean, at first, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. Like, where are you getting the you know, especially like the weird accusations, you know? I was just like, where are you getting these things from? And it's like, I feel like you could see an evil spirit from the Lord really hitting people, because it was like people went mad. It's almost what it, I mean, I sat across from a lot of these people.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what happened? What's going on? You know? And it's an attack. It's a spiritual war, you know? And it's one that needs to be fought. Let me just say that, you know, one of the lessons I took from it is that giving people the benefit of the doubt is a good thing, you know? But if you do that to a certain point, you can actually damage other people in the church. You know, the shepherd is there to protect the flock, and we're under shepherds of Jesus Christ. So, you know, I took some from that. I also feel like, I hate to say this, but, you know, it was a lesson that was good for me to learn on what other people have gone through as far as pastors. Because, like, you just, as I said, sitting in the, listening to the preaching, you just don't know. You just don't know.
Yeah.
Until you've seen it, you know. So.
That is true. When it comes to giving people the benefit of the doubt, you can sometimes do that too much, almost to a detriment.
Yeah.
And I think the natural default setting for a pastor is to give people the benefit of the doubt, because you believe in people.
Right.
You want to believe people that people are here for the right reasons, that they love you, they love the Lord, they love the people here. And quite frankly, you have genuine love for them.
Right.
And so, you know, we want this to be a fairy tale story of a church where there's no problems.
Right.
And sometimes that causes us to give people the benefit of the doubt who do not deserve the benefit of the doubt. And in
right.
fact, they actually merit scrutiny.
Right.
And, you know, a watchful eye. And, you know, I learned the same thing as a pastor, where it's just you trust people or you think people are good people, and then they just kind of do a 180 on you. It's funny you brought up the whole Pentecostal thing or the oneness thing, because even years after I was already ordained, we're actually here. There's a couple who was here, and they've been gone for a while now. But one day the husband just took me aside into the office and he said, "Hey, I'd like to talk to you about something." I'm like, "Sure." And they had issues in our church before. And nothing crazy, just, you know, sometimes they didn't get along with certain people in our church. But then he just kind of accuses me of being a heretic. And it was something out of left field. It's like, "What?" And it was over like an interpretation of scripture, and this was like a second or third doctrine type of a thing where it's an obscure passage
sure.
type of a thing. And so he said, "I think you're teaching a works-based salvation." And I said, "Well, you know I don't believe in a works-based salvation, because I preached about salvation all the time, and you can scour my sermons. This is just an interpretation on this particular passage, and it's not even about salvation." He's like, "Well, you know, I think you're a heretic," kind of thing. And it was one of those things where it's just like, this guy, and I try to like placate him, where I thought to myself, "Well, you know, if you think that I'm misinterpreting the scripture, that's fine. You know, everyone is, you know, they can have their opinions and their interpretation of the Bible. And so that's up to you." But then when he started calling me a heretic, it's like, "Oh, this guy's a bad person." Because a reasonable individual is not just going to come to you and say, "You're a oneness Pentecostal."
Right.
You know what I mean? And just accuse the pastor of such, especially when there's so much evidence to the contrary,
right.
sermons that you preached and things of that nature. So when a person does that, it's like a switch goes on where it's like, "Oh, this person's bad.
Something else is going on here.
There's something else below that that,
yep,
you exactly. know, I'm like trying to deal with the doctrinal issue, but this is not a doctrinal issue."
Yeah, and that's a mistake I made, right? I just try to, you know, I'm an engineer. I want to solve the problem.
So yeah. Like,
okay, this guy thinks I'm oneness. This is easy because I'm not.
Yeah, I'm just going to show him why I'm not.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me just quote verses of the Bible and point to sermons and see, I'm not oneness.
Right, but that really had nothing to do with it.
It had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And so I've learned as a pastor that a lot of problems that people bring to me about myself or my family, whatever it's coming out of their mouth is actually not the issue.
Right.
There's some root problem.
Yep.
And they're just using that as an excuse to come and attack me.
Sure.
But yeah, I like the point that you made, because I think to a certain extent I did that, where I give people the benefit of the doubt who didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a lesson that every pastor needs to learn. But I mean, your church is doing great. You guys moved out of that building, right?
Yeah.
You guys are in a different location now. No homeless people.
Right. Pretty much no homeless people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the kids can play outside, and we got, you know, basketball hoop for the kids, and it's... You know, that's a benefit of being in that. I always tell the church family, like, I'll never forget the downtown church, and because it'll always make me appreciate where we are now.
Yeah.
You know, and I see the kids running around outside, and it just brings joy to my heart, because they could have never done that you know, downtown. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. So how is the Fresno area as far as, I know you mentioned that it's really receptive when you're in the downtown area. Is the area they're in now, is it pretty receptive, or you have to go a little further out when you evangelize?
Well, now we're in an area that's a little bit, it'd be less receptive, still receptive though. I mean, you know, it's around the church is more, you know, middle class. It's not going to be the, you know, the poorest neighborhoods in Fresno, but it's not the richest neighborhoods in Fresno either. So, you know, it's just like any other city. You know, mm-hmm. once you get into the upper class areas, it's going to be less receptive, just like, you know, the Bible says, you know. But we still go to, you know, we still mix it up, and we haven't knocked every door in Fresno, not even close. So We're working towards that, and some neighborhoods are more receptive than others. And, but, you know, we've gotten a lot of new church members from around the area that the church is at.
That's great.
Through soul winning.
That's awesome.
And follow-ups on soul winning. So we're just doing what we're supposed to do, and the Lord's taking care of us. So
would you say there's a need for churches in California, Pastor Pazernski?
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is, regardless of what people say, you know, about California, this is where the people are.
Yeah.
And there's 39 million people here, and they're from all over the place. Every time you go soul winning, I'm sure in this area, it's like soul winning around the world, right? Mm-hmm. It's people from all different parts of the world, all different countries, all different backgrounds, all different cultures, and they're all in California.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. You know, that was a problem in North Dakota. There's no people there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was literally living in a place that there was no people. So I always say that to people. They're like, I want to move out into the middle of the woods. And I'm like, nah, you're supposed to be
where the people are. Yeah.
And the people are in California.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we just drove into LA today. Let me tell you, there might be some that are leaving, but there's still a lot here.
Oh yeah. There's a ton here still. Well, here's the thing is that, you know, a lot of people will talk about California catches a bad rap because of its liberal leaders, and it's a quote unquote liberal state. But when you actually speak to the individuals though, a lot of them, I'm not saying they're conservative, but in my opinion, because they're so receptive to the truth, there's something there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been doing ministry for about 16 years, 17 years, soul winning for about 17 years. And I'll be honest with you, I've just met so many receptive people here
right.
in California in different cities. I've ministered a lot in Los Angeles County, and now, of course, Anaheim. And in those areas, I just find a lot of receptive people to the gospel. And whether it's poor areas, and obviously in any area you go to that is rich, so to speak, they're not going to be as receptive. But in general, the population in California has always been receptive to the gospel. And I just wish more Christians would stop being so afraid of California by either leaving or they would just kind of come back and strengthen the spiritual warfare that's going on here. Because I think we need more laborers in California. We need more people soul winning in California, churches that are starting in California.
Well, I mean, I've said this in a sermon before, and I'm going to touch a little bit on the conservatives tonight in the sermon. But here's the thing. First of all, where did this attitude come from that when things get tough, we run away? I mean, aren't the conservatives in this country, aren't they the John Waynes and the cowboys and
supposedly.
And the draw the line in the sand type people?
Yeah.
But the problem is, and here's another thing, I've actually met some people in the last year and a half that actually did move out of the state. I've talked to them and I talked to them why. They weren't church people. They weren't Christians, but they were conservative. You know, they're your Trumpers or whatever, right? And they're leaving the state, and we're getting out of here, and Gavin Newsom, and this and that. And here's the thing, like, Gavin, I thought so many different things. I could talk about this for an hour, so just cut me off when you have to. But but I thought so many different things about that. First of all, Gavin Newsom doesn't really affect my life. And I have my people here. And I was thinking when these people were leaving the state, it's like, what about your people? Where are you going to, you know, but they didn't have any people here and they're going to go to Tennessee or live in the woods or wherever. And they're not going to have people there either.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be just as miserable. And the problem that they're going to find is that the conservatives here, it's not Gavin Newsom that's the problem. The problem is that people have left the Bible.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? People have left the Bible in North Dakota and Tennessee and Oklahoma, and all these places across the country, they're going to go to these places, and they're going to find the same problems.
Yeah, it's like the question I have here is, what are they looking for? When they move, what exactly are they looking for? Are they looking for a sense of security that they feel they can find in a red state, in a conservative state? Are they looking for churches? What is it that they're running from, and what is it that they're looking for?
Well, they're not looking for churches, the ones that I've met.
Yeah.
They're looking for more money to keep more of their money. And, you know, one of the things that the policies do in California is make it more expensive to live here. I get that. But they're not, the point is they didn't have people here because they're leaving everyone, and they're not going to find people there. What they're going to find when they go, trust me, what they're going to find when they go to these small towns where nobody lives is they're going to find one culture there. The beauty of California, with all its problems and all its messes, is that you can find your people here. And, you know, that's what we're doing is we're going out and we're
sharing. When you say looking for people, are you saying that people leave California to go to a different state to find like a community? Is that what you're...
They think they're going to find a more like-minded community.
I see what you're saying.
You know, and I've lived in small town America, Nowhereville, USA. And there, like I said, if you're not... What people don't understand about small town America is if you're not from there, you ain't never going to be from there. If you didn't go to the high school and you didn't, you know, have your kids in the sports,
you're always going to be considered an outsider.
An outsider. We became an outsider when we started homeschooling.
Oh wow! You know, in North Dakota.
In North Dakota, because you know it's the town, it's the school, it's the basketball team, it's you know, and I've seen many people from the East Coast and the West Coast move to these small towns, and they're out of there in a couple of years because they don't fit in.
Wow.
And they're never going to fit in.
So a lot of the reasons people go is because they want to be around people who they think are like them.
Right.
But then they come to realize that the community that they find, they don't even want them.
Exactly.
Or they don't fit in with that community.
Exactly.
Because that community already has its roots in, you know, they were born there, they've gone to school there. They associate community with growing up in that particular city or town.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're not going to just accept overnight some outsider.
Yeah.
Who is from California or something.
Right. Yeah, you know, if you're from California, you're starting off on a bad foot already.
Yeah. So you have to kind of lie about it or something.
Say, oh, we're from Nevada or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the point is that there's more conservative Christian people in California than any other state.
I've told people that, and they don't believe me, but I've I live in Orange County, and Orange County is considered, like, a very conservative part of California. And particularly Huntington Beach, areas like that, they call it like Trump Town. It's just where they have all the Trump rallies and, you know, nothing closed down during COVID or whatever. And some of these people I feel like are more radical than the people that I've met in other states. And the only difference between the two, in my opinion, is it seems as though the people who are here, the conservatives, are a little closer to the Bible. Like they actually esteem going to church. They esteem reading the Bible because I interact with these people all the time.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of them, whether they're leaving or not, I'm not sure, but I've noticed that there is a spiritual difference between the two. Whereas I've gone to places like Georgia, Tennessee in particular, where, you know, a lot of the churches are kind of dead. And I visited those churches, Fundamental Baptist churches, not new IFB churches, Fundamental Baptist churches that they're not necessarily, you know, it's just... They're not really reaching anybody. They're not really big on soul winning. They're just kind of big on their little community kind of a thing.
Yep.
And so the culture, that community culture that you're talking about kind of infiltrates the church as well. And they stop being loving towards those who are on the outside coming in type of a thing. And so even church culture is different in other states, in my opinion, than the cultures that you have here. And I'm not referring to new IFB churches because I feel like new IFB churches are the exception to that rule because of the fact that they're soul winning churches, they're doing missions, and we interact with each other. But churches in general that are Fundamental Baptist churches, I feel like a lot of them are dying in other places. And I've been to other churches in, you know, different states, and it's just not the same life that I see even in liberal California. You know, and so I think the answer is, you know, obviously we could look at the Bible and see that God commands us to flee to another city if you're being persecuted to the extent where like your life is in danger, you got to flee into another city. But the wicked flee when no man pursueth, though.
Right.
And if you're just running because you think Gavin Newsom's coming after you or because you think you're being outnumbered, you know, you think there's a boogeyman. You know, that's not a good enough reason.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm able to homeschool my kids in California.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, California has very good homeschooling laws.
They're very lenient.
Nobody's chasing me down when I go to church on Sunday morning and
exactly.
Wednesday night.
Yeah.
I mean, it's oh, well, there's a lot of messed up stuff going on in California. Well, there's a lot of messed up stuff going on everywhere. And it's just California, I mean, they that are whole need not a physician. This is where we're needed.
Yeah.
Right? This is where we're needed, where there's so many people that are,
well, even, you know, whatever problems that they're actually talking about, I personally don't see. And if I come across it, like you mentioned, it doesn't really affect my life.
Right.
My life, my quality of life has not been affected living as a Christian in California. Obviously, we had that persecution, but that's because of the Bible, right? That's
right.
Because I'm preaching the Bible. But just our quality of life, regardless of what president is in the White House, regardless of what mayor we have or governor, I've not been affected by these things at all, and neither have my church members. The only people that get affected by whatever's going on in California are those who keep up what's going on
right.
in California. And the people that I've noticed who are always affected by what's going on in California are people who don't live in California, right. but they keep up with what's going on in California.
Exactly. I know a lot of these people. They sit weird. Around. It is weird. They sit around and they watch the news, and they're all whipped up about immigration and all this stuff and California this and California that. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm here. You know, I mean, yeah. the Central Valley is politically red.
Oh yeah.
I mean, where I live, and the vast majority of people whose doors we knock on are conservative, hardworking people. Mm-hmm. And like I said, they're happy that you're there with the Bible in your hand.
I have people tell me all the time from different states, you know, they tell me about the problems that I'm facing here.
Right.
Know? They always say, well, this is what you guys got going. And I'm like, I don't see that. No, like, yeah, you do. And I'm like, how can you tell me that? I literally live here.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've been in Los Angeles. I'm in Orange County. I'm in a metropolitan area, and I don't see these things. And they just don't believe it.
Yeah, we have the Second Amendment here.
Yeah.
You can conceal carry here.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know.
Well, that's another thing. It's America, like, here. They move because they want to be able to open carry. And here's the thing, like, you know, I've talked to people, and they're like, yeah, but you can't open carry. And I always ask them, I'm like, why do you open carry? Do you think that God has given you the right to open carry? And he's like, absolutely. And I said, so why do you need to go to a different state where they allow you to do so if it's your God-given right? Shouldn't that be a right that you have everywhere? So it's at the end of the day, it's this mentality of like, oh yeah, God gave me the right, but I need to go somewhere where they allow me to actually exercise those rights or something. If you really believe God gave you that right, you should just do it wherever. But that's not necessarily the case, or you don't believe that.
Yeah.
You know? And so, I've had friends who moved out of California, and now they're coming back. Because where they went was not that it was all cracked up to be.
Yep.
You know, and they realize then, they're like, this is terrible out here. We're going back.
Yeah, I mean, California's a beautiful place.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's unbelievable. I mean, the places we saw today, I mean, just the kids and my wife and I, we always say the same thing when we're driving through the state or visiting somewhere. We just can't believe we live here.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we always say that. I mean, the kids said it 5 times today. We can't believe it.
Yeah.
Look at this bridge. I mean, look at this, you know, these mountains and these flowers. I mean, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
And
that's undeniable. I mean, people have told my wife, or they've asked my wife, like, how do you homeschool there? It's California. How do you do it? And my wife's like, we have some of the best laws when it comes to homeschooling. And they're like, what? I'm like, we're thinking, like, who have you been listening to? You know, I think last year or the year before, there was like an exodus of like 300,000 students that left public school to be homeschooled
yeah.
in California.
Praise God for that.
That's a lot of students.
Exactly.
I mean, even the school that's right around the corner from my house is closing down because all the parents are pulling out their kids and they're homeschooling.
Exactly.
You know, and so...
And it's friendly. We just went to a bookstore today in your town, Anaheim. I forget the name of the bookstore, but this place was like a gold mine. We could have been in there for hours. But we're just bringing stacks of books up to the... It's all these old books.
Yeah.
And my wife collects these readers. She collects these readers from like the 1920s and 30s and 40s and 50s. You know, the literature books that they used to... They literally have the Department of California mm-hmm. Education stamped in them still.
Yeah.
And it's great because, like, she wants to give them to our grandkids and, you know, when they're being homeschooled. Because, like, the story, all the girls are wearing dresses. And just, like, you get to see what America was like back then.
Yeah.
And it's just this really wholesome, you know, literature book. But we picked up all these books and we put them on the counter. And all these books are, like, $3 a piece, $4 a piece. And the guy says, he's like, are you an educator? And I was like, well, she is. He's because he's gonna give us, he was gonna give us a discount for being an educator. And he's like, homeschool? And he's like, you bet. He's like, 15% off.
Oh, that's not, that's awesome. We'll
so,
take it.
I mean, homeschooling,
they're friendly towards homeschooling.
They're friendly towards homeschooling. We see that everywhere. People see my kids, you know, at home all the time. If people are around us, you know, during the day, and they're excited that we homeschool. And you know what we get a lot in California? We wish we homeschooled. We get that a lot. I think that's a big driver, and I tell people out soul winning that when you get somebody saved, tell them we're family integrated. Talk about the church. Talk about how we're a homeschooling church. Because I actually think that there's a ton of people. You said that 300,000. I think that there is millions of people in California that would love to homeschool, but they don't think they can do it.
Yeah.
And
it'll
if
be
they
good,
knew,
a good foot in the door.
Yeah, if they knew that there's a church that, you know, your wife doesn't have to start at ground zero, and there's ladies that could help
there's like
her.
There's a community.
There's
that
a
can
community.
Help. You can get your foot in the door by talking to that person.
Yeah, your people are there.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
That's a great idea. I never actually even thought about that.
So, but yeah, we see that all the time. I mean, homeschooling, I say it's not just for weirdos anymore, right? I mean, when I was in high school...
Well, the weirdos actually are in the public schools now.
Exactly. It's kind of like went like that.
It switched, yeah.
But when I was in public school, there was that one kid who was homeschooled, and then like he was homeschooled 1 year, and then his parents put him back in school, and then he
there
was
definitely a stigma that homeschoolers had. Even when I was in my old church, they would talk about homeschoolers, and they lived up to the reputation because they were a little weird, you know? They were like antisocial or whatever. But I think it's changed now.
And, oh, definitely.
You know, I think it's almost like a flex to be able to homeschool. It's a luxury to people to homeschool. It's a flex, and it's definitely superior. I mean, it's biblical, but it's just a superior way of life. And I've noticed that just a lot more people are starting to do it, especially in California. And I think that's great. You know, but I'm going to take that into consideration. Just mentioning that when we talk about our church. Because you just never know how many people are out there do want to do it, and they're for it, and they don't realize that there's a church that promotes that type of living.
Yeah, it's just, it's a bridge that people don't think they can cross.
Yeah.
Oh, we'd love to do that. They talk about it all the time. Because look, nobody likes what's going on in the public school.
Yeah. I mean,
it's crazy town there.
Absolutely.
And nobody likes that.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, but they're like, we can't do it. We can't do it financially, they think, which is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that they're, you know, the wife thinks, I couldn't do that. That's too hard. And how would you, you know, start that? It's such a foreign idea to people.
I think it's good that, you know, because there's like some laws that Gavin Newsom passed regarding schools and what time everyone starts. And some people are starting later and getting out earlier. And people are really mad about that. But I think it's great because make the public school as just distasteful and horrible experiences as you possibly can so that parents are open to homeschooling. And then through that avenue, they'll find themselves a church that is doing homeschooling, supporting homeschooling, and there's a community there. And then you can, you know, you, obviously through that, we give the gospel, the people get saved. It's just another door by with wherewith we can get the truth in there to the families of California.
Exactly.
I think that's a great idea. Exactly. So you recently, actually this week, you came out with a documentary on Scientology, right?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that before we close off here.
Well, I've been doing, over the last few years, I've been kind of bouncing in and out of a series I call American Heresy. And I go through like a lot of the heresies that, you know, you're going to run into at the door soul winning. So I've gone into, you know, Catholicism, Pentecostalism, Mormonism, JWs, all that stuff. This time, I jumped back into it for the last couple of weeks, and I decided to do kind of a one-off on the Church of Scientology because I have seen it several places in California. It's really big in the L.A. area, big in Florida. And so I did a sermon, did a lot of research for the sermon on Scientology. I did the sermon on it, and then I got to give credit to Garrett for the documentary. He just really did a lot of work on that. But it just got to be such a rabbit hole of this mind control cult that we figured it, you know, we decided that we need to make something more than just a sermon out of this. So we took a lot of testimonials from, you know, one good thing about Scientology is that a lot of people have gotten out of Scientology in the last like 10 years, especially.
Mm-hmm.
And they're telling a lot of upper level people, cause it's kind of a thing where they really want people with a lot of money cause they're, you know, you got to pay to get to these different levels.
Mm.
And a lot of these people at these upper levels have gotten out, and they're kind of exposing these secrets. So that's what the documentary really shows a lot of is just what the whole thing is. You know, you don't have to pay, you know, if you're thinking about Scientology, you don't have to pay millions of dollars.
Just watch the
documentary. You're going to get it for free here. So, and it, and it's really, it's really mind blowing as far as what people, how people can let themselves be, you know, Christianity is based on free will of belief, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just how people just allow themselves to get grabbed by these wicked, evil people. You know?
Well, I was watching it, and there's a segment of the documentary that highlights some of the things that the Church of Scientology will do in order to resolve past issues in a person, right? They'll use certain tactics. And it made me think about, there's a cult that existed, and the name is fleeing me right now, but it was in the 1960s and 70s, and they're actually associated with Manson and some of these serial killers of the 70s, like the Son of Sam. Well, they were a part of a particular cult that was called the Church of Something. It came from Europe, but they also used those same tactics where they would kind of they would have them revisit certain traumas in their life, and they would kind of use that to try to heal them. And you know, I don't remember exactly the what is it they call the
audit sessions.
The audit sessions.
Yeah.
But they were to examine. I wasn't referring to the audit sessions. What is it that lives in you? I forgot.
Oh, the thetans.
The thetans. Yeah. And it's just like trying to examine the thetans in you, and it's just like, what in the world?
Yeah.
But there's a cult that existed during that time, and I'm trying to think of the name.
Is it Jim Jones? Is that
no? It's not Jim Jones. He was. I think he was prior to that. He was the church that I'm referring to was like in the 60s and 70s, and they greatly influenced Charles Manson and his psychopathic ideologies that he had, and also the Son of Sam and other weirdos out there. But they use some of those same tactics.
But it's interesting because all these cults, and I didn't have time to get into this in the sermon and in the documentary. We didn't really touch on it, but L. Ron Hubbard mm-hmm. was very tied up before he started the Church of Scientology. He was in the Aleister Crowley crowd.
Oh,
he was in the occult stuff. I mean, it's all tied back to the same thing, right?
Yeah.
It's all run by Satan and his demons, right? And these guys are all experimenting and playing in that world. And then, you know, he created this religion.
Yeah.
Out of it.
This science fiction religion.
Yeah, exactly.
Thetans. I was like, although I forgot, I'm thinking to myself right now, like, you know, a good way to remember it is just Satans.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Satans in you, you know, yeah. The devils that you possess you or whatever. But yeah, it's a great documentary. Go on Hold Fast Baptist Church on their YouTube channel, Hold Fast Baptist Church, and you can watch the documentary there. I know that Pastor Pozarnski, you put out a couple of documentaries, but they're typically, basically they're your sermon, and then your son basically puts the content within there as far as whatever subject you're covering. And so they're great documentaries. I want to encourage everyone to go watch that. We're looking forward to having you preach for us tonight. Thanks for making time. I know you're here anyways, but we'll take it.
No, I'm excited
and
to
so,
be here.
And so, Pastor Pozarnski, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. Is there anything else you want to say? Want to make a plug-in for your channel, for anything, for your church?
No, just if you're ever in Fresno, come to Hold Fast Baptist Church. We'd love
give
to
the
have
address.
You.
What's the address?
The address is 4323 North Golden State Boulevard, Fresno.
And you have Sunday morning church at 10:30?
10:30 a.m.
Sunday night?
5 p.m.
And then Wednesday night?
7 p.m.
7 p.m. If you're in the Fresno area, make sure you visit his church. It's a great church, awesome pastor, awesome people. Pastor Pozarnski, thank you again for being on the show tonight. And Godspeed tonight, and Godspeed when you go back home, all right?
Thank you very
much. God bless you. We'll be right back.